Speaker is Jonathan R. from the 7:30 Daily Early Morning Study Group here at NABBA.
Hey everyone, I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here tonight. And I did want to say thank you to Tim, one, for asking me, because I do think it's an honor and privilege to get up here and share your story, try to get back to AA. But he's been doing this for a long time and recording these for posterity. Grateful to be up here, not only doing the Blue Chip speaker meeting, but here at NABBA. I hope that I remember to get back to it, but this place was a safe place for me when I first got down to Atlanta. It's meant a lot over the years. I'll take out the tissues that a friend already gave me. That's going on in the back, whether or not I'm going to cry during this or not. We'll see. See if we get there. I grew up not down south, but up in Michigan. Son of two parents. Very much loved me. Very kind of typical middle-class family. Divorced when I was around 3 years old. Spent time between both of them. It was very important to them that I spent time with them and that they could have a chance to raise me. I've had what I've heard a lot of other alcoholics talk about. And I don't know if it came from there. I don't know what part of it led to me becoming an alcoholic. I learned over time that I didn't really need to figure out why I was an alcoholic. I just needed to accept that I was if I wanted to find a solution. But I can tell you that I felt very much apart from everyone else. I felt like there was just something that everyone else in this world got or understood that I didn't. It led me to feel very much alone in that I just wasn't going to get by in this world, that there was something always against me. I learned different ways to cope with that, to deal with that. It kind of got me through my day-to-day living. I learned how to be who you wanted me to be in different situations. That was really the main one I used for quite a while growing up. You know, I would be this person for this group of people, and I'd be that person for that group of people, and I would freak out if anyone would come together because I didn't know how to be both those people at the same time. I can tell you that's one of the gifts that this program has given me, is an ability to be truthful to myself and try and carry that into any situation. You know, I'm terrified right now. I'm able to stand up here because I found something in these rooms and in this program that allows me to show up for myself and for others. With that, I'm really grateful again to be up here today. You know, that got me through a lot of things. You know, I had the typical problems with authority once I hit puberty, problems because the opposite sex wasn't giving me the attention that I wanted them to give me. And again, just felt very apart from. And I was very adamant that I didn't want to partake in any drugs or alcohol. I thought that was never going to happen to me. My mom's father died from this disease at a young age, about 56, and I always heard stories. That wasn't going to be me. He was just some black and white picture I saw on the shelf. He wasn't real to me, and obviously I was smarter than any of that. I could drink like a gentleman, or so I thought. I kind of made it through most of high school, just kind of barely skimming by on my grades, really. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I barely graduated high school. It was something that I didn't want anyone to find out, so I hung out with the smart kids on the side and tried to get there, but I really struggled, because if I couldn't be good at something right off the bat, then I didn't want anything. I was terrified that you'd see that I was stupid or not making the grade, and then I'd be in danger, and then you wouldn't want to hang out with me. Towards the end of that, for whatever reason, some of the cool kids invited me to a party, and all that, like, never going to touch it, that's not for me, that's only for other people, changed when someone who I wanted their validation, their acceptance, asked me to. I was like, well, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And it was, I mean, I remember everything about my first drink. I remember what it looked like. I remember the smell of the room. I remember everything. I've learned over time, like, I hang out there in the real world. I don't see a lot of people who aren't us who have a memory of their first drink like that. And I blacked out from the very first drink I had. But I got up and I said, when are we doing this next? And I did that because it allowed me to feel like I was part of. It was magical to me. I could talk to anyone at that point. I could talk to the pretty girl. I could talk to guys. I could say the things that I thought were funny in my head but never felt confident enough to get out. So it opened up a whole world for me. And I gladly stepped in. I was lonely and I was scared and I wanted to feel part of, and alcohol did that for me. I think I took that to an extreme, like it talks about in the book, because the disease of alcoholism, as it's been described to me, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I wasn't able to see that for a very long time. But I got out of high school, well, before that, I guess, I kind of viewed anywhere I was as the wrong place. I don't know if anyone else has ever felt that way, but that is exactly how I felt. In middle school, man, they were going to get me when I got to high school. When I was in high school, when I got to college, everyone was going to understand what a big deal I thought I was. And they were going to give me everything I wanted. And that just kept going on. And I got to college, and I was dating a girl who went to NYU, and I started heading out to New York. And I was like, well, this is the place. This place, I can blend in. I can be anyone I want to be. Whenever I finish college, this is where I'm going, because this place is finally going to get it. I moved out there right after college with the money that I had. I remember I was sitting in my first apartment in New York, and there was this tiny thing that I shared with this other weird guy. But I had a big window, and I could see the Empire State Building, and I just had like a smile on my face for like 3 weeks. And it was my, like, I have arrived. And I was always, always looking for that. Like, what was in front of me? What was in my future? When was the universe finally going to give me what I felt I deserved? Because it hadn't been up to that point. And I was always unsatisfied with the world as I saw it. Got out to New York, 21, 22. Really no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I was scared that I was going to be back in Michigan blinking and waking up at my retirement party and not knowing what it was. So I did what I did best. I lied to people. I told everyone I moved out there to be an actor. I can barely stand up here in front of you. Like, that really wasn't a good career path for me. You know, that's what I told myself and I told others for quite a while. Eventually, I found my way into the restaurant scene out in New York City. Really found like a like-minded group of pirates. That was my place. I arrived again. These people knew how to drink. They knew how to go out and have a good time. Not only that, they did it at fancy places, and man, that made me feel great. I wanted to feel better than everyone else, and I could have the right glass in my hand with the right drink in it, and I could look sophisticated, and someone else was picking up the bill. That was great, man. I loved it, and I really told myself that was me. That was my life. Now, I was really just hanging out to other people's coats and going along, and I got some good experiences out of it. Honestly, most of it I don't remember because I was either in a brownout or a blackout for most of that time. I had some friends. The first couple of years were like really bone-crushingly lonely. It gave me a good justification to pick up another drink. I always had a reason why I had to have another drink, and loneliness worked well for a while. But I got some friends, and then there was always, you know, something. You know, there was someone there. There was someone coming into town. There was a reason. Next thing I knew, it was probably about 18, 20 years later, and I was still in the same spot, you know. I'd sit down at the end of the bar, going to whatever bar that I knew the bartender would give me free drinks at, or I could sit there and tell them about all the terrible things going on in my life, and they'd feel sorry for me eventually, and they'd pour some more alcohol on it. They'd soothe it. They'd make me feel better. But I was miserable, and just putting on a face for everyone else. But that mask was really starting to be a part-time thing. I couldn't keep it up. I was just sad, angry, miserable most of the time until I could get a drink in me. And none of this I could see because I just constantly told myself over and over again that I was living the right way. You know, I tell you right now that I thought everyone who was stupid enough to go out there and feel their own emotions and live life without this great thing, alcohol, was below me, and I had really figured out the secret to life. Relationships ended. I think, if I got the count right, about 5 or 6 jobs just disappeared. But in my mind, that was their fault. They didn't understand me. They couldn't really see the true essence of who I was and how I could help them. I got fired on a job for being drunk on the job, and while they're firing me in the office, I like looked them dead in the eye and said, if you ever need help with your bakery program, I'm your guy. I can come back and help you out. Like, I was so blinded to who and what I'd become because I didn't want to see it. I'm grateful that I can see it today. I'm grateful that it hurts me a little bit today. because I get to share with you, I get to share that experience with you, and hopefully you know what I'm talking about. If you do know what I'm talking about, you're probably in the right place. So I find myself in this state, a lot of friends gone, most of them not returning my calls, pretty typical for a lot of us. And I decide, I have this great idea that I'm going to spend the summer drying out. I'm going to do this by going to my then-girlfriend's boss's restaurant up in Maine. I got this great opportunity, I'm going to go up there, I'm going to dry out. But if I'm going to do that, I'm really going to need probably a couple bottles of rosé and a fifth of vodka for the bus ride up there. That made sense to me. That's the insanity of this disease. I told myself one thing, but I find myself over and over and over and over again doing something that I didn't want to do. And, you know, I taken the megabus up to Maine from New York, you know, found my ways to sneak it on, to get there, sitting in the bus toilet, drinking straight vodka. That's where I was at. And once it touched my lips, that was it. It was off to the races. That sip didn't make it to Maine. I don't know how many bottles of rosé did. But I got off that bus, and I had a job for the summer with housing, the whole thing. And I showed up to my job, and I was blackout behind the bar. And they very kindly came to me and said, "We need you to go and get out of this place. Go and lay down. We'll talk to you tomorrow." I remember waking up, and I think the Big Book describes it best as the Four Horsemen. And I had been in that state many times before, feeling that bitter morass of self-pity stretching all around me. And I didn't know what to do. But I got enough courage and strength, because there was no more alcohol left, to go down and talk to them. And they said, "Hey, well, you know, this is a tiny little lobster island of Maine. We know what alcoholism looks like, and we think you have it. We also think you should be on the 12 o'clock ferry back to the mainland, and you should never come back." And that's what a gift. Like, I got the big Hollywood ending. Like, that should be enough. Embarrassment. I don't feel like I can go home. I've rented out my room for the summer. I don't have any place to stay. My girlfriend's boss is definitely going to know about it. It's his restaurant. There's no more lying. And I can remember being on that ferry back to the mainland, and, like, it felt almost freeing. You know, there was just, like, there were no more lies. All the balls I'd been juggling for so long were on the ground, and it was like, well, at least there's not that. At least I don't have to do that. But the other thought in my head was, what if I just throw my suitcase over the side and hold it all the way down? And it seemed like a pretty good idea, because the shame I felt inside was overwhelming. I didn't want to face what I'd become. I didn't want to face all these things. And I'm really glad I have an opportunity to stand up here today and say that, because I couldn't say that 7 years ago. But it's my truth. If anyone is feeling in that place where they feel shame about things they've done in the past, I can tell you that in coming in these rooms and finding a sponsor to help me walk through these steps, I don't have to run away from that anymore. I know that that is something that I can hopefully use to help someone else. And that's one of the reasons that I'm up here tonight. So I get back to the mainland, I can't face anyone. Not my friends, not my girlfriend, not my family. Not going to do that. Check myself into the cheapest motel I can find and continue to drink. I don't really know how long that lasted. Until the money ran out is the best answer I have. I remember calling up AA Central Office in New York, and this really lovely man, I don't know if I've ever talked to since, answered the phone, and I just told him every single reason why I drank. All the things that had been done to me, all the terrible things in my life. He listened very patiently, and at the end he said, "You know what, you sound a lot like me. Sounds like you hate people." And I was like, what? I'm in the restaurant industry. This is my job to deal with people and show them a good time. He's like, well, maybe. Maybe I could show you where a meeting is. And I was terrified to go to that meeting. I absolutely could not. Thankfully, they put me in touch with someone who had been going to meetings for, I think, about 4 years at that point. He had been going to meetings. And he called me up. He said, "Hey, can you just try not to drink until we meet for coffee?" I said, "Sure, that sounds great, no problem." Proceeded to run someplace and drink as much as I could, because I was so terrified of what I would find in these rooms. I mean, all I had ever known was what they show me on TV and in movies. It was not the place I wanted to be. It's not how I thought my life was going to work out. I had a very small idea of what success was. This was not part of that. You people weren't part of this, of my life. I didn't want it. He did what we do. He picked me up. He took me, grabbed coffee, and we walked around a small little park in downtown New York, and he just told me his story. Friends here who are supporting me tonight will know, like, I just cried through the whole thing, just walking around there, through yellow eyes, just walking around, hearing this man's story. It was just like mine. And he said, hey, there's a meeting starting in half an hour. It's a men's meeting. It's around the corner. I'd love to take you to it if you want to come. I think I said yes, and he said, great. And he said, there's going to be a long table right down the middle, and everyone with less than 90 days is going to sit at that table. And then everyone who has more than 90 days is going to be sitting around that table looking at you. So it's going to be real scary. And I know that because I've been there, and I sat in those chairs. I went in there, and he said, by the way, there's going to be a guy. He's going to get up. He's going to share a story for like 10, 15 minutes about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. None of that made any sense to me. And then he said, then it's going to go around that table in the middle. And when it gets to you, you'll know because everyone's going to be looking at you. And then you can just say, hey, I'm Jonathan. I'm alcoholic. I said, no, thank you. No, I'm not going to do that. I'll give it a few weeks. I'll go in. I'll test it out. I'll see what this is like. But I don't think that's where I'm at right now. He's like, no, I think that's what you should do. Just give it a try. Let's go sit down and let's meet some friends of mine. I said, all right. He went in there and, you know, is filled with, like, the coolest guys I could think of, all of which I was terrified of. I didn't understand why they were in that room because that's not what AA was. But they were there. And then this guy got up, this, like, huge guy who I, you know, type of guy I pass on the street any time of day, and he started telling his story. He started saying things out loud that I was terrified to say to myself in my own head. And I didn't understand how he had the courage to do that. I didn't know what that was. And then it got around to me and I started crying at the table. I don't know what I said. I have no idea how long I went for. When I got up, again, I felt that deep shame, that fight or flight was kicked in. And I mean, I could not wait for that meeting to get over. I wanted to head towards the nearest door. I knew, you know, I had mapped out where all the liquor stores were. I was going to get something, and I was going to drown that away. And like 16 guys just came up, just surrounded me, just reached out their hands, said, "Hey, yeah, what you said touched me. It's. I've been there. I know what that is." They actually, Michael, gave me this book because that's what they did at that meeting. They give out to newcomers, little pocket books. And he said, call me. And those guys called me day after day and just checked in on me. How's it going? What are you doing? What's going on? Now, I had nowhere to live at this point. It came out to my girlfriend that I had created a scene up in Maine, and I didn't know what to do. So I went to my first AA meeting, and then the next day, probably in DTs, jumped a flight back to Michigan to my childhood home because I had nowhere else to go. And I'm like pacing back and forth in the airport, and these guys are calling me, and they're like, it's all right. Go get a milkshake. You need some sugar. You'll be fine. And they walked me through like my first flight back home. I'd love to tell you that that's my sobriety date. It's not. I got back to Michigan, my first meeting in Michigan. They taught me how to look at the meeting guide, where to go, all that. I went to this clubhouse that was right around where I grew up, went to a new meeting. It was me and some guy who had gotten out of rehab 2 days ago, and I knew enough to pick up the readings. And that was my second meeting in AA, and I sat there thinking like I usually do. They're much better in New York, you know. They got it going on in New York. But I got maybe 90 days, but I kept bouncing between New York and Michigan, New York and Michigan. I get like 2 weeks, and I'd be like, oh, I got this. You go to a meeting, people say some stuff, maybe you say something, I don't know, and then you go home, it's good, I'm cured now, right? Like, this is good. You know, what happened was I'd go back to New York, within days I'd be drunk again. And that happened over and over and over again. It felt like eternity to me. I look back at it, and it really wasn't that long, but I was going in and out of the rooms for about 18 months, and every single time I picked up again, it got worse. And it happened faster every single time. And the suicidal thoughts just got louder and louder and louder in my head because I just couldn't deal with the pain anymore. I'm there. I'm back in New York. I got this bright idea that the reason that I keep on picking up a drink is obviously the roommates that I have, I told them that I'm an alcoholic, and they keep bringing alcohol back into the house. I have to steal it. Like, there's no, it's their fault, clearly. I talked to my sponsor about it, and he made a suggestion. What he said and what I did might not be the same thing, but I decided it was all right to tell my three roommates, you know, it's been fun. Thank you for giving me your money, letting me actually steal from you for a few years, but you got to go. And this is going to save me. This is what's going to keep me safe from alcohol. They're not going to bring it in. I'll be just fine on my own. Set off to, like, get sober roommates. It didn't help. I still was there with myself. I still had no tools to fight off all the things that I was ashamed of. I had no connection to anyone because I showed up late, I left early. I had no ability to call someone else in the program. All these things that I was being told, but I didn't do. I was lucky enough this morning at my home group, which was brought up before, the 7:30 early morning study group here in Napa. I was lucky enough to see a good friend pick up a coin this morning. He had 2 years. And something that they said to describe him was, from the moment he came in, he wasn't just at meetings, he was part of meetings. And I was never that. It never worked for me. And I sat there at first saying, maybe I'm too smart for this thing. I can't get this thing. And then the terror came over me that maybe I was too dumb for this thing. That other people could get this, but not me. Because I've been trying, and it's not working. Thankfully, I had really great men and women around me who pointed out the fact that I wasn't trying this. I was going to a few meetings. I was trying it, but I was living in a lot of pain doing that. I'm sitting there without a job. Sorry. I got my first sober job. I sold pickles at a pickle stand. That's what I could do. And I will let you know right now that does not pay for a 4-bedroom apartment in New York. Not after you've kicked everyone out and you start drinking again and canning them, you know, I'm buying not the top shelf that I used to love to show off to people. I'm going and I'm have exact change because the liquor store knows that I'm going to get the Aero vodka from the bottom shelf. Just whatever will get me through that moment. Whatever will do it so that I can get enough to black out and then wake up and start all over again. That's just what my life had become at the end. So I had to move home. There was nothing about it, and I kept relapsing there, and to the point where I knew that there was no other choice. And that's what I love about this program, and what I'm grateful for that alcohol did for me. It took away all the options. I had nothing left. I sat there, and I begged my father to take me into rehab. And I said, tomorrow morning I'm going to convince you that I don't need to, because I know how to do that now, and I will, but you have to. You can't listen to me, because I'm not safe with myself. And I was ready. That was my first real surrender, and that was September 27th, 2017, and thank God I haven't picked up a drink since. I went in there, and I just, whatever you had, please just give it to me, and I was ready to listen to you, and you said, go to meetings 15 minutes early. Stay 15 minutes late. Find service work to do. Do the coffee. Do anything you can. Set up chairs. Take down chairs. Show up and be there for other people. And I didn't know how any of that was going to take my pain away, because I still felt it. And I felt it without my friend. You know, I wasn't numbed out. I felt it fully. But I started doing what you told me to do. And it took some time. I stayed sober for the first time for a little over a year. And I found myself in a relationship. That person moved down to Atlanta. And I said, I can't bounce around from state to state anymore. I need to walk fully through the steps, because I am scared to death that I will pick up a drink. And if I pick up a drink, I will die. I knew it. I knew it wholly. It was impressed on me that if I wanted that relationship to keep going, I should get my ass down here. Before I did that, I had great sponsorship that suggested that I come down here and I find a nice, soft landing place. Get myself known. maybe pick up some service positions. And I came down here. I went to my first meeting. It was at St. John the Wondrous over by Grant Park. And it was an interesting meeting. But I met a gentleman there named John who happened to have his home group here at NABBA at the 7:30 meeting in the morning. He suggested maybe I stop by my next time in town. I came to that meeting. Marilyn was doing breakfast downstairs. At that time, there was a big board in the back that said, anyone with any kind of experience in the kitchen, come downstairs. We'll take you. And so I'd come down here about once a month, and I'd go downstairs on Saturday mornings, and I'd work down there with Kathy and with a lot of friends and who were just there and took in this scared, shaking kid. Honestly. I did that, and then I moved down here. And when I moved down, I had a safe place to go. And my sponsorship at the time said, all right, well, the first 3 weeks that you're at any meeting, I want you to say, raise your hand and say, hey, I'm Jonathan. I just moved down from Michigan. I'm looking to get involved here at the club. And then share. I didn't want to draw any attention to me. But I did it. What do you know? People recognized me and knew me, and it was a great thing. I also was instructed just to me to find a sponsor, and I came down here, and there was this weird mountain-looking man sitting at that table back there with a hat. Not really my cup of tea, but I had come down here, and there was this podcast I was listening to, and it was about spirituality. I didn't know anything about spirituality, but I figured you guys did, and I wanted to be like you, so I'm going to listen to this podcast. There's this Irish poet on there. I remember listening to that Irish poet, and there's like one little part of that poem that he said that really spoke to me. I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I walked in this room, and this mountain man sits up there, raises his hand, starts sharing. He says this weird little thing at front, and then he says, I was listening to this podcast yesterday, and there's this really cool part, and he said this part, and I was like, wow, I don't know what the hell God is or what my higher power is or anything, but that's something. So later that day, I went down and I said, hey, you know, Thomas, will you be my sponsor? Will you walk me through the steps again? And he didn't want to. So he said, have you been through them already? Because I don't take new timers through anymore. And I said, yeah, kind of, yeah, sure, I have been. And we worked together for about 4 years. And that's what I found over and over again in this program, that when I don't know, my higher power shows up, showed me what to do when I knew nothing else. I had a safe place to come in the rooms. He showed me when I didn't know what to do anymore because my way wasn't working, that your way could work. It had been for you for a long time. Showed me how to find a place that was safe when I finally got down to Atlanta, which in 2 weeks will be 5 years. Showed me how to find a sponsor when I didn't know what to do. Keeps showing up and showing up and showing up. And what I've learned over time is that's what's being asked of me too. It's just to show up. You know, be a part of. Every time I do that, it seems to work out. So about a month ago when I came here and I had a friend from New York who we used to run and gun, but he got sober like 3 years, 4 years before me. He was in town for a Monday night and I took him to the 545 and I was introducing him around because I was so happy to be sharing my path in sobriety with him. And I introduced him to Tim, and I knew I made a mistake. And Tim said, hey, I got an opening on July 1st. You want to speak? But you taught me to say yes to anything in AA. And I did. I knew that I would feel better afterwards. The other great thing is that, you know, I was so worried when I got to the 12th step, you know, how was I going to do this? How was I going to show someone else how to live this way of life that I'm just stumbling my way through? The great news is I didn't have to. I'm responsible for my sobriety. I will gladly walk with another man through this program, shoulder to shoulder, but they told me I'm not responsible. I can't make someone drink who doesn't want to, and I can't stop someone who does. And I get shown that time and time again, that it's not me. It is my higher power. And I'll give you an example. This morning, I woke up and I went to the 7:30 meeting, and that guy got 2 years. He is sponsored by one of the guys I sponsor. I sat there and I watched this miracle happen for him, happen for the guy that I get to work with for the last 4.5 years, and know that it has nothing to do with me except for showing up. The words that I shared with my sponsee came from Thomas. And I know for a fact that they came from this guy named Larry, who I never met, but who gets brought up in these meetings over and over and over again. And that message gets passed along and passed along, and now it's with Tom. And that same thing will be passed along. All I get to do, and my first sponsor told me this, is be a small part of a greater whole. And I get to do that when I show up. I get to be more myself when I show up, hear your story, and recognize my own humanity, because I recognize yours. It's not what I saw when I got here. I saw a bunch of people I wanted nothing to do with that could not help me, and I was on my own. I look at this room tonight with so many different friends from different parts of my life that have helped me in ways beyond my wildest imagination. And I know that the end of that third step prayer is true, that I am in the care of a loving God. I only found that here. So if you're out there tonight, if you're new, don't understand what's going on, it's okay. I still don't most of the time. If you are out there and you're hurting, if it's your first 90 days, if it's your first time back, if it's your 10th time back, if you're sitting in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with much more time than I am and are in pain, I love the part in the book that says that this is a program that is a solution to all my problems, not just my alcohol problem. That's been taken away from me for a while now. I haven't had the desire to pick up a drink in a very long time, relatively speaking. I have other problems. Most of it is all created in my head. But this program and the people in this program have shown me a way to get out of that. And that usually starts with calling another alcoholic for me. If you are in pain, you don't have to be. If you're just coming in, I hope you hear what I heard. Just keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you, Jonathan. Your story was amazing. We've had Laura Kay to come up and hand out the chip.
We want to recognize that we have a system here to celebrate our time in sobriety. Do you need to open it?
No,
I'm sorry. I'm Kirk. Thanks. But the very, very first chip is just a recognition that just for today, you have a desire to not drink. Does anybody want to pick up a white chip for the first time or multiple times?
How about for 30 days a night? Any more for 30 days and nights? 60 days and nights? 90? 6 months for yellow? 9 months green? Blue for a year or multiple zeros that we don't know about already?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ellen. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. And I know probably half of this room knows this lovely lady here. It is so funny. I was thinking about the first time that we met each other. I wasn't sure I wanted a sponsor because I didn't really know if I had what it took to be a sponsor. And I was talking to my sponsor a couple of weeks before saying, how do you know if you want to be a sponsor or not? She's like, if you have 24 hours sober and someone walks in with 5 hours, you have something to say and you have something to teach them. And so I was like, okay, well, if it happens, it happens. Well, all of y'all know Misty, the director of SLA. And so we're here on a Monday night and she said, Ellen, I have the perfect sponsee for you. I'm going to go get her right now. And I was like, wait, just, and I couldn't even say wait. And she's like, Ellen, Jennifer, Ellen, that's your sponsor, that's your sponsee. And I was like, okay, what do I do now? Because I wasn't sure. My God, my higher power laid this lady right here in my hands. She really did. She is an amazing person. She's a wonderful person that, like all of us, have been through a lot. She has cried many, many tears. And I've cried right along with her. Sometimes it's not about what you say or what you do. It's just sitting there with somebody and saying, I feel you. You know, we all have that in common, and we all feel each other, you know, and what we've been through in our lives. And it's comforting to have people to come to. And it's not just comforting for the sponsee. It's very comforting for the sponsor. And I have had so much joy brought to me being your sponsor. And she has really had a hard year, but she has been steadfast. And she don't like suggestions. However, every time I say them, she takes it to heart. So, Jennifer, this is a special medallion I ordered for you in your favorite color, purple. And it has the third step prayer on it on the back. So, congratulations.
Well, obviously, I got super lucky and got the best sponsor ever. You know, and of course, Misty takes complete and total credit for my but she couldn't have paired us together any better. Love her to death. Don't know where I'd be without her. She makes taking suggestions. She's the best suggester I've ever met. Because I don't like to take them, but she finds a way to talk me into it. So, anyway, and so couldn't have done it without her. I think the, you know, I was thinking about what to say, and I think that the thing that, the first step that I took in the right direction was becoming willing to do this. And that was where, what I had to wrap my head around, because that wasn't the plan when I first got here, you know. And so, but that became the plan, and you know, and that's still what I'm working towards. And I have to continue to become willing every day. And you know, and it's a process. And some days I'm more spiritual than others. And so, you know, on the days when I'm not particularly feeling it, I have, like, coping mechanisms and stuff like that that I do to help myself get through until I am doing better. So, and I continue to see progress, and that's the plan. So I'm going to stick to it. Thank you.
Promise left you twisting in the wind.